Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to this special episode of Hometown Glory. I'm Charlie and delighted to welcome a guest whose voice will need very little introduction. Since 2018, he's soundtracked the Tottenham Hotspur roller coaster as the wildly popular voice of Spurs TV, which also meant, of course, having a starring role alongside Jose Mourinho and Tom Hardy on the All or Nothing documentary. He also hosts the official Champions League podcast and radio show, commentates on Premier League games for Premier Sports in Ireland and a number of broadcasters around the world, plus various work on European leagues. Rob Daly, it's a pleasure to have you on Hometown Glory. How are you?
I'm good, Charlie. Thanks for the lovely introduction. And yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Like I love talking about the club. I love talking about football. I think I'm just like you guys. I listen to your show and I do love your show as well. I love the mixture of the fact you talk about Spurs and then get into a bit of culture stuff. So I'm looking forward to doing a bit of that too, if you'll indulge it. So
Absolutely. Lovely
to be here. And yeah, let's get into it.
It's a pleasure to have you. You're a very busy man. Spurs are playing every sort of 48 hours at the minute, it seems. And you've got a ton of other stuff as well. Tell me, how's this season been for you? I mean, you seem to be taking on more work than ever.
Yeah. New gig this season, which is working for Premier Sports. Premier Sports is in the UK, but they have the 3 o'clock kickoff in Ireland. We can't show that here, obviously. So I'll go over and do that. And it's really good fun. They've got great pundits, all Ireland, ex-Ireland internationals. And, you know, people like John O'Shea, Shay Given, Damien Delaney and Gary Breen, who I do the commentary with, you know, just a great bunch of, really great bunch of people. And then Spurs, of course, you know, that's the majority of my work. It keeps me really busy. Spurs end up playing normally about 60 games a season, something like that with the season. And, you know, it extended cups and everything. So it's such a great job. It really is a lot of fun, and it has been busy. And I'm looking forward to the summer off, if I'm honest, mate. Ever since the pandemic, it's just been, and since football came out of the pandemic in May, June 2020, I feel like I haven't had a week off, and I'm not complaining here, but I am looking forward to the end of the season, Spurs finishing fourth and everything, and everything being right with the world.
I mean, this is your fourth season covering Spurs. So in that time, you'll have covered Spurs from three different home stadiums, if we include that night in Milton Keynes and the Carabao. They'll have had four different managers and they've played in three different European competitions. I don't imagine when you signed up. So you would have signed up just... So Spurs were at Wembley, right?
That's right.
And, you know, everything was looking rosy under Poch. You know, Spurs are club on the up. I don't imagine you had in mind that you would have to sort of just be across so much drama and a club that's gone through the ringer in so many different ways, right?
I certainly didn't. And I don't think that in terms of drama, I don't think there's been a club that's rivaled it actually in that time. Over the past 4 years, if we're going from the stadium move, the delayed stadium move, the Champions League final run, Jose Mourinho, Poch gone, like club hero gone, all these unbelievable players, you know, coming, going. It's just been crazy. And like, you know, if someone said at the start, you know, at the start of that season, the whole idea was that the club were ramping up because this new stadium move was happening. So we're investing more money in the club TV. It's going to be XYZ. We're expanding all our coverage of everything, as we've seen with N17, with Ben and Marzi, which I do, and Michael Dawson and people like that, that we do that with. And then, but I couldn't have, I couldn't have imagined that it'd be a Champions League final win in 9-10 months. It was an extraordinary season. But I think actually that season, anyone who saw Spurs, who watched Spurs every week, as you do, knew that even though the team reached a Champions League final, something was up with the team. Yeah. Yeah. I really felt it from January, December, January time, maybe even from, around that time. You just knew something was, the team wasn't right. It wasn't functioning right. They were winning games and they were in the title race actually for quite a long time that season. But you knew that something was up. And then from roughly that moment, and I think some people would even say the end of 17-18, there's been this wild, wild ride, which still we're still on. I mean, at the moment, it's up and down every game.
This is the thing. I mean, I'm loath to even address any sort of the most recent Spurs drama, because, you know, it feels like in 24 hours the roller coaster can go back up to the top, and you're, you know, feeling like top four's on. 24 hours after that, you feel like actually let's just finish eighth so we don't have to, you know, bother with the conference next season. And, you know, Conte's gonna go, Kane's gonna go, it's all disaster again.
Exactly. I mean, even like last week, so it's Everton, the 5-0. We had a great time. great time on the. Who was it on your show who gave away their ticket? On the last edition of the show,
Rosa gave away her ticket for that one.
It was a huge, because that was a great atmosphere, great game, great performance, all the rest of it. So you're thinking, oh, here we go, Kane's best strike in the world. So all that business is going on, and then suddenly, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get into the United game, but I actually thought Spurs played quite well, actually, but still just got undone by some brilliance from Ronaldo, obviously. So again, another week where it's just boom, mega high Monday, and then boom, maybe a really damaging defeat in the Champions League race.
Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, being a Spurs fan in general is exhausting, but this season just feel, and I you know, I feel like Conte kind of adds to it, in that, you know, you're never quite sure which Conte, well, maybe you can guess these days if it's a defeat, you know which Conte you're going to get, but yeah, it's kind of added to the general levels of exhaustion that I think we're all feeling. Tell me a little bit, before we get into our main Spurs 7 questions, Rob, tell me a little bit about your path into commentary. How did the sort of bug get you for commentating on football? What was your journey into it all?
Okay, so I loved commentary anyway as a kid, and would do it in the garden and all that stuff.
Who was your favourite?
Oh, mine, Tyler. I loved Martin Tyler. We didn't have Sky, so I'd go around my friend's house and he had Sky, and it was Martin Tyler. Everything just felt like so great. Like, I just loved Sky's coverage, particularly in that time, sort of 90s, you know, mid-90s Sky coverage. So Martin Tyler was a guy, and then I sort of grew out of that a little bit. Mid-teens, I was like, right, you need to find an actual thing you could do. And then about 18, I decided, actually, I'll take a gap year and go be a journalist. And then I was a news journalist for quite a few years, and working for radio stations, reading news bulletins and interviewing people. I did journalism at uni, blah, blah, blah. And then occasionally it'd be like, do you want to go cover, because I'm from Essex, it'd be like, do you want to go cover Colchester United this weekend, go down to Layer Road, interview for Phil Parkinson, do you want to go out to Ipswich? Yeah, I'll cover Ipswich, Joe Royal and stuff like that. And then eventually I could phase out on the news, and eventually it wasn't just solely sport that I was covering at weekends, it was football all week. And then really from 2010, I've been doing it. Football exclusively, but yeah, I've been in broadcasting and journalism for September 2004, so nearly 18 years, quite a long time. But now I just commentate. Yeah,
it's commentary feels like one of those quite exclusive clubs that's a pretty tough nut to crack, in that, you know, the sort of top dogs tend to stay in their seats for, you know, literal decades at times. How when you're starting out, is it quite a daunting thing to, you know, a daunting mountain to feel like you're attempting to climb?
It feels more daunting now, because when you start, you're just so happy to be in. Yeah. When you get in, when someone says, do you want to go to Dagenham and cover Dagenham Chesterfield? You cannot believe your luck. You know, if you're 22 or whatever, you just...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You can't believe it. Someone's going to pay me, like, back then, probably about 40 quid to go down there and no mileage or nothing. And you'd go... And I couldn't believe my luck. So then you just bump up the industry. And then, you know, I'd love to be on Match of the Day one day. And my voice has been on there a few times. I'd love to be on Sky Sports one day. And my voice has been on there a few times indirectly. So now it just seems, but there are this category of unbelievable commentators. It's a good observation because it's true that these guys stick around forever because commentary is interesting because when you watch a game, you don't get to pick who you watch it with. In this instance, like you're just given a commentator. So when a broadcaster finds someone that people like and feels like a warm presence so they can watch football with, they'll just keep them.
Yeah.
Because football fans are, you know, a fickle bunch. We all are, you know, as football fans. And, you know, you don't want to disrupt it a little bit too much. And some of those guys, like, you know, some people had varying opinions on Martin Tyler. I still absolutely adore him. Steve Wilson, who I work with on Match of the Day, and BBC is just like unbelievable commentator. So it's a very specific job. And actually now thinking about getting to that level is actually probably more intimidating now.
Well, you're certainly making it. I feel like this season in particular, you seem to have really made a splash with Spurs. I feel like I've been reading, I think the sort of Bergwijn-Leicester game seemed to be a bit of a tipping point. And I read a few really quite interesting pieces about the kind of, I guess, cult of sort of club commentators and that sweet spot that you have to find, I guess, where, you know, you're not commentating from a purely neutral perspective, but you don't want it to be fan TV. You don't want it to be so partisan that it just sounds utterly ridiculous. That sweet spot must take some work, I imagine. And going into that first season working for Spurs was, I imagine it must have been quite a daunting thing to find that place where you felt like you were, you know, doing a good job and servicing fans without it sort of becoming just fan TV.
Exactly. Again, that's really right. I mean, because I mean, the thing with goals now, especially for something like Spurs TV, is what you say for a goal lives for ages. It isn't just like if you're doing the club's radio service, for example, and you scream and go, yes, 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 they've done it, you know, just go absolutely berserk. That just drifts off into the atmosphere normally and you never hear it again. Whereas I'm very aware that, you know, I'm not live. I'm not going out live anywhere when I do the game. I do the games live, obviously, but you can't watch my commentary live. But I'm very conscious that the longevity of these goals and moments, these live on for a long time. And that's why you sort of have to compose it. Because with Bergwijn, and Bergwijn was a game changer, really, in terms of probably the way that Spurs fans see me and recognize me, you know, ever since that game, I used to walk around the stadium, no problem. No one recognizing me or anything. Even when I did N17. And now people just come up and say hello. That's so lovely. Like, unbelievable. That Bergwijn goal was like a bit of a game changer, really. And I mean, I felt like I got a lot of credit. I think Bergwijn should have got a bit more credit than I did. But
maybe if he did one more useful thing since that, he might have got a bit more credit. But
I know. Bless him. I mean, I thought he'd had that equaliser against Southampton, but he was just
offside. Oh, good. Yeah, forget about that.
I thought it was 3-3. I thought he'd done it again. And then, but no, and Spurs fans are just unbelievably nice to me. It's a real, really, really nice to have that, you know.
And you came in and took the job. I mean, you know, it had been done by someone for a long, long time. So that must have been an extra level of, you know, sort of, oh God, I'm also stepping into the shoes of a long time sort of servant of the club, really.
That's right. Yeah. Daniel still works for the club. He does like the in-stadium sort of radio kind of commentary. So of course, and you know, it's, you know, you also, because the moments like really belong to fans. I'm not trying to sound like cheesy here.
Yeah.
You feel this burden to get those moments right and sort of deliver the passion. Like, I don't think my commentary is biased. I hope people don't. And there was a thing written about the Bergwijn goal in the on the Daily Mail. They did an article about it, and it was about bias and how bias is good in club TV. The article was predominantly really kind about my commentary, but it was, I felt it it wasn't quite nailing the point. I'm not biased, I don't think. I'll be more passionate and give it some when Spurs score, obviously. And I really feel it, you know. It's like that Bergwijn moment or the Kane goal against City or Lucas Moura against Ajax. They're euphoric. You can't help yourself. It's just it's unreal. But I would never... Fans don't want to be lied to. They can see it. If you're on there going, well, you know, say the Southampton game, where Southampton did outplay Spurs in the 3-2 win, quite comfortably, controlled the game, they were tremendous. If you came off air and went, well, another day Spurs win 4-3, it was like, no, that was a loss and it was a deserved loss. You know, you can't, and fans can see, you know, they call it out if you're lying to them. So I'd never, you know, I just try to not do that, just try and tell the truth, be constructive. And I do try and be positive. You know, you don't want to be, you know, just hammering these guys, you know.
Do you get much direction from the club, like when you started and over time? Have the club, do they provide feedback? Do they sort of try and nudge you to be more positive, or perhaps even the other way if
nothing,
they feel like it is?
Nothing.
Okay. No feedback.
They say they like the commentary.
Okay, you know, that's good.
And I get a contract every, you know, at the end of every season. I say, I've got another contract. And then that's normally a good thing. But that's what commentary is like. Barely anyone gives you feedback. Fans give you feedback on Twitter and it's normally negative and horrible. I remember coming off air once, I did a Rangers game on a Premier Sports, and that was quite intimidating because Scottish football is so nuanced, you know. And had a couple of nice people saying, it was nice to have someone who clearly was not a Rangers or Celtic fan on the coverage or whatever. And then this guy said, where did you find this piece of S word? You must have found him at the bottom of a skip, which I really like the specificity of that, that I was clearly at the bottom of a big pile of rubbish. You know, I was in the dirtiest bin imaginable and they put me on commentary. I've always loved that one. But, you know, fans will give you a bit of feedback, but the club don't. They've never, ever said, oh, you need to start being a bit more positive now. Or you know, not a peep, nothing. And hopefully that means I'm just roughly doing it right rather than, you know, anything else in particular, you know.
I would say so. One thing I was going to ask you about the difference between regular kind of broadcast commentary versus the club commentary. Obviously, when you're doing it for Premier TV, etc., you have a co-commentator with you, usually an ex-player. Club commentary, though, you're very much a kind of one-man band. How is that? What's the sort of dynamic shift in doing it? You know, you're kind of basically talking to yourself for an hour and a half when you're doing it for Spurs TV.
Yeah. So you do sound a bit mad because you can even make yourself laugh. You sound out of your mind, but hopefully it sounds, you know, it sounds. And normally it'll be something on the pitch that makes you laugh. And normally, like if I say something that's even mildly funny, the gallery will get on the talk back to me and be laughing or something, you know, to just reassure me that I haven't lost my mind. When you do something like Spurs, I'm obviously on this dual position of calling the action and then also trying to the best extent I can, give tactical analysis and all that stuff that maybe a pundit would. So, you know, the normal beats of TV commentary, you might not be fully aware of it, but you'll recognize it now, say it, is when a goal goes in, you see the goal, you see the celebrations. The second the replays come in, that co-com takes over. And that's a general rule. Any replay you just give to the co-com, and that's when Carragher, Neville, whoever it might be, will break down the goal from a tactical point of view and everything. And then you as the commentator give the context and maybe try and tell the story a little bit. Whereas when I do Spurs TV, you're trying to do all of it as best you can. Now say the goal the other day, the Ronaldo second, right? So is Reguilon plays on Sancho, doesn't he, far side. Now, I can't definitively tell you. So I can see Reguilon plays on Ronaldo and I can see that the back five is like a bit curved and Reguilon's the deepest. Now, is Reguilon definitely at fault there? I can't say for definite. I don't know. It might be that he didn't get caught. Something. He's looking along the line, so he probably should be in line. But is he absolutely definitely at fault? I don't know for sure. So that's when it's nice to have a co-commentator who's an ex-player who can give you something. Really, I know on Premier Sports, I work with Gary Breen, old Ireland defender, and his analysis is unbelievable, really underrated, and always says something that makes me go, I didn't see that, which is what they're supposed to do, you know.
I guess it's quite useful sort of just training up for yourself, though, right? Having to do both those sort of gigs in one, it's quite nice to sort of build that skill set.
It's really fun. I mean, you know, you sort of back yourself most of the time. I mean, for, you know, to do the tactical side of things, I mean, in terms of the stories and everything, you know, I'm a journalist, so you can see what the story of something is and say, I was trying to think of a recent example. Say something really basic, like Heung-min Son against Palace. First goal at the new stadium, yeah? Cuts in and got deflection, didn't it, on the way in. Say that goal. When that goal was in, I'll give you a hypothetical. There might be a series of headlines around that goal. It might be Son's 10th of the season. It might be his 10th in 10 games against Palace. He might have said he was determined to score in this game. But the top story of that goal is that this is the first goal in the new stadium, obviously. Right, I'm giving a really obvious example. So when goals go in, actually, my brain is really doing what's the story. And with Bergwijn, for example, it was like, what the hell? Really? It's like, can you believe this? And then I did say some nonsensical things really around that goal, but people liked it. But you're trying to get to the story as quickly as you can. And say Harry Kane at City. So because we're Spurs TV, we don't really talk about club rumours, and we definitely don't talk about, you know, the fact he was linked with City last summer and stuff. We don't really get into that too much. But when he scored that goal, I definitely said something about it was I tried to really hammer home this, like he's dominated the Etihad tonight. I thought that sort of covered the story in a way.
Yeah.
Whereas also told the story of the game in which he destroyed City. He was unreal. It was the best I've ever seen him play that game. Mm. It was crazy. And so you're trying to do that. And then that stuff I feel I could do well. The tactical stuff is like, you know, you sort of give him really basic stuff. Like, oh, Romero lost Ben Mee for that cross. So he's at fault, sure. You know.
And I just wanted to know as well about prep, particularly, I mean, obviously, you know, like you were saying, you've got those storylines that you will have worked up before. Your training as a journalist will absolutely help there. But in terms of actual kind of self-scripting for potential big moments, I think, you know, it's fair to say, like you said, the Bergwijn sort of Kane last minute winners, those are just pandemonium. You're just going to say whatever sort of pops out. But how much prep do you sort of put into preparing sort of nice little kind of cute lines that would very much suit a moment?
Pretty rare. I mean, a lot of guys will say, I never do it. And they probably are lying. you know, say you're commentating on the World Cup final for ITV, yeah. 25 million viewers. And you know, there's a possibility Harry Kane scores the last minute winner. You're going to have something in your head. Roughly. So I'll always go in, maybe if there's something really obvious, say, I actually didn't do the goal call as well as I would have liked. Because the Kane and Son thing, I got the stat, the goal combination thing, you know, the goal against Leeds.
Yeah.
And I sort of knew I wanted to do this thing about the fact they were legends, but now they're legends. Ah, this is actually a better thing to say. Legends together, you know, something like that. Oh, that'd been a good line. But, I didn't deliver it quite right. I mean, things like...
You did get there quicker than most. I remember there was a bit of sort of Twitter chat about how, I think yours was the only commentary that mentioned it within like...
Was it?
A minute and a half. That. Like the Sky commentary absolutely just like bypassed any real mention of it. You could almost hear the producer sort of nudging the commentator. Going,
They've broken the record kind of thing. Well, that's the thing. And what was great about that goal was it was like quintessential them.
Yeah.
Because when I think of Kane and Son linking up, I don't think Son setting up Kane.
It's weird, Kane's, isn't it?
Yeah. Kane setting up Son. So, and the fact it was like, we all know how people who watch Spurs every week know Kane passes like that every game. Mm. And he does that. And it was like everything was so typical then. You know, the goal was just absolutely the perfect goal to do it in a sense. And it's a brilliant goal. So rarely, but sometimes you'll want to have a rough idea up your sleeve. I mean, I remember halftime United, 6-1. Sorry, am I rambling here, Charlie? You can tell me to shut up if you want.
Oh, don't worry. I'll tell you to shut up when it's time. Keep going.
Halftime United, 4-1, I think it was halftime.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at the break, it's such a shame there's not on a way end. You know, like I just remember having that, like the amount of, in particular, loaded with all the misery that Old Trafford associated with Spurs fans. Like Old Trafford was just like, you know, probably a fun away day to a point, and then just defeat. And then I remember thinking that I thought, oh, that's a clear idea to express a lot of things about Spurs' relationships with Manchester United, about COVID, about how mad this result was. So then when Serge Aurier scored, I think I said it. It was either that or when Kane scores. Do you remember it? It was I think it was that goal. I think I said something like it was a performance. Yeah, a performance that deserved a way end. So I'd had the rough idea, but not the. It wasn't like I was like, you know, like that reading it off a thing, you know. So yeah.
I guess you just have to watch the sort of drama unfold and react. I feel like so much of your job is just being on your toes, right, and figuring out stuff as it happens. And as usual with Spurs, things can turn pretty quickly.
How can you prepare for them? Honest to God, honestly, no. That's what's so fun, you know. To lose those games. I've almost lost the order of them in my head. But Wolves and Southampton, it being 4 defeats in 5, and then going to City and deservingly win.
Yeah,
made no sense.
And then go to Burnley and lose, then go to Leeds and thrash them, then get knocked out of the cup against Borough. Yeah, it's then thrash Everton. It's anyway. Amazing. We should dive in to our world famous Spurs 7 questions now, Rob. So these are the questions that we ask all our guests that we feel cover the full spectrum of the Tottenham Hotspur experience. Your Spurs origin story, please. So how did you wind up getting involved with this preposterous football club?
So my mum was a Spurs fan. I knew she'd like love me do it covering Spurs. And it was just, yeah, so it's 2018. And then by summer 2018, I was covering my first game, the Newcastle win, the 2-1 win where Dele and Jan Vertonghen scored. So yeah, that's where it began on Spurs TV.
And I imagine you get very, very attached very quickly, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm obsessed with the club. I mean, I was saying this to someone the other day. Like, I sort of just think about, I don't know, I read everything. I listen to every pod. You know, you might have a YouTube channel with like 50 views on your videos. I'm probably one of the 50. Like, I'm just reading and listening and watching everything. And then by the time game time comes around, I'm just so pumped to see what, excited to see what happens. And yeah, the obsession has reached concerning. I'll tell you a very brief story, actually, Charlie. There was the day where all the Super League stuff was happening and Jose lost his job. Mm-hmm. Cheryl was like, shut up about Spurs today. So I was like, right. So we were going out to this restaurant in Shoreditch. And I said, okay, don't let me talk about Spurs. If I bring up anything, you can just, you know, tell me whatever. And we sat down, and next to us was, you know, Joe Sacramento.
Joe's assistant. Yeah.
We just sat there having a drink with a couple of friends. God. Sat next to me. I was like, I know I said I wouldn't mention Spurs, but Jose's assistant's right there.
Was this after they were fired?
The day of.
Had he found out the news when you were with them?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything was done by that point. So you know, I imagine it was quite a stressful day for him, probably just, but it was just like amazing coincidence. I said, I showed Cheryl a picture of, you know, that clip of Joe Sacramento's like to the Jose, tell the fourth official he needs to get a card. You know,
oh, in the City game, yeah.
The City game. So I showed him that. I was like, that's him. She was like, oh, yeah. So she let me talk. And then that was it. No more Spurs after that.
Just a brief sort of 2.5 hours. And then
exactly.
By the time sort of puddings came out, you were ready to
I was done. Yeah.
And I imagine you get, and this sort of links into my next question, but I imagine you get favourites as well, right, with the players. You know, you're involved with the club in a way that, you know, means these aren't just sort of blokes that run around for 90 minutes. You get to know the personalities of everyone, etc. Have you sort of latched on to a few in particular?
Definitely Sonny.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, there's a lot to
is
like.
He, is he your all-time favourite? I'll link this into the second
I probably
question.
Would. I probably wouldn't. I said, you know, I think fundamentally, obviously, in the modern era, even Kane's a better player.
Mm.
You know, Kane's a better player than him in some, but he would be my absolute favourite. The amount of big moments he's had, what a great bloke he is, a great guy he is, proper modern professional, so lovely. Everyone at the club adores him. It says a lot. It does say a lot. And Spurs have been really fortunate to have one of the best forwards in the world. You know, we didn't know he was that, certainly off the back of his first season, did we?
Yeah.
That he would turn into this.
I think him signing that contract in the summer too, I think during a pretty bleak time for Spurs fans, be it the manager hunt, the Cade saga, you know, not finishing, you know, in the sort of top four again. I think for Sonny to have committed himself in that way was a huge shot in the arm that I don't think fans will forget in a hurry. And, you know, even probably though he's obviously...
Yeah, probably an underrated... I mean, I remember there was a lot of excitement when he signed the contract, but probably... Given how good he is, probably almost underrated how crucial that was. And maybe in a sort of pre-pandemic time when Barcelona, Real Madrid and all these clubs had all their big money, it'd be like, well, PSG want him, well, Barcelona want him, Real Madrid, you know. But it cost you loads of money. It cost you an absolute fortune now. So a blessing.
Absolutely.
Blessing.
A true blessing. And, you know, and he's just added so much. You know, I live in Tottenham and it's just so lovely on match days just for the influx of Korean fans that we have. And, you know, to a person, they're always the most like charming, wonderful, engaging people that don't seem to just love Sonny, but seem to now have a real love for Spurs as well. And they come and, you know, they come to the pubs, they chat to everyone. It's been amazing. I think that guy has brought so much to our football club.
That's the tour will be special, I think. The South Korea tour they're doing this summer.
Yeah.
Special because of that. You're absolutely right.
Any other favourites from your time doing the commentary that you've sort of, maybe some sort of under the radar favourite, perhaps?
Under the radar favourites. Who's been? I'll tell you what, 2018-19, Moussa Sissoko. Like, okay. He was unreal. He was
so the Champions
unreal.
League run.
Champions League run, yeah. Because I don't think anyone necessarily saw that pairing of him and Winks being the pairing that would basically take a team. And I know Wanyama had some game time in that Champions League run, even when things were really depleted. But he was just, he was so good. He was monstrously good. And I think Sonny that year did win all the individual accolades. And then the club legends actually got together to make an award and gave, because it didn't exist, I don't think.
Yeah.
They gave Moussa Sissoko, they presented it to him at the training ground, the Legends Player of the Year Award, and he deserved it. You know, he was crazy. So that version of Moussa Sissoko, in terms of like, yeah, he was, yeah, and largely derided figure, really, you know. By and large, until that point. So yeah. I'll have him in there as well.
Who's your favourite terrible Spurs player? You can't say Sissoko.
I'll actually go. So I'm staying in my Spurs TV era, right? So
yeah.
I really did like. It didn't work, Carlos Vinicius, right? So Carlos Vinicius.
Okay.
Because in the Premier League, he just did not look. He didn't look Premier League worthy, did he?
Oh, God. Do you remember that Chelsea game? Like, really depleted. That header he missed would have made it 1-1, I think. Just looked so. Like sort of competition winner level. It wasn't good.
It wasn't right. But then he banged in all those Europa League. He got to double figures, and that was maybe what Spurs needed a little bit. They needed that guy in the Europa League to just get them through the group stage, which is exactly what he did. The other thing with him, I think he was really likable. And if you ever saw his story, is fascinating. If you ever saw the Spurs TV content where him and Lucas Moura go to a Brazilian restaurant, I don't know if you remember that, but
and
Carlos is getting all emotional about the, I think it was the death of his mother or his father, I can't remember. Unbelievable. So I think he was just, couldn't believe he had managed to get to this sort of promised land. And, you know, I saw him playing for PSV the other day. That's probably more his level in truth, you know.
He's done all right over there, isn't he? He's doing okay.
He's done okay, yeah. He's done okay. You know, and, you know, playing for a top end Dutch club or, you know, mid-range German club, or, you know, one of the three big boys in Portugal is probably about right. But I think we're still waiting to see that Harry Kane second striker or backup, the proper one.
Was that perhaps the more mind-blowing thing from last summer to you, that they didn't replace Vinicius? I mean, they didn't replace Bale either, really, but not have any sort of backup striker at all.
It was more an issue in terms of, I mean, I was looking at a pure numbers point of view that you probably would have wanted another forward. It was more that, so out the door had gone Lamella, Bale, Vinicius, had anyone else? And in came Brian Hill. Was that it? In terms of
attacking players. Yeah.
So it just felt like, especially with Spurs being in the Conference League, if you're solely Premier League, you know, maybe a bit like the season Arsenal having, you could probably get away with that. And then maybe you look to Dane Scarlett, whoever. But it just felt like Spurs just needed another body. And then, you know, it was a classic thing. Kane's playing, having to play Conference League and play every game. You know, a bit of the problem that the central midfield problem that Højbjerg had to play every single second, you know, and it's probably hurt his form at times, the amount of how dependent Spurs were on him under Jose in particular. But I think I'd be amazed if that wasn't addressed in the summer. particularly Antonio Conte, someone who likes to play with two strikers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was so jazzed for that, you know, when all the Lautaro Martinez rumors were started. Because I read all the rumors, just like, I don't get told anything. So I was jazzed for that. And then obviously it didn't happen.
That was a fun 35 minutes when it looked like we were going to sign him.
It was that brief. Yeah, yeah.
That really sums up a sort of Spurs summer, I think. That kind of, it was like a Sunday morning, I think. I was getting ready to take my daughter to football practice and got loads of texts from friends. Oh my God. Martinez is happening. This is a thing. Like Gary Jacob in the Times is reporting it. And then it was literally, I was getting in the car about 25 minutes later and the kind of Ali Gold sort of tweet of doom came in, you know, kind of dismissing
it.
It's not done.
It's not done.
It's not done. There are significant hurdles for Spurs to clear.
Yeah, well, Lukaku, I had no idea on the unit. All I read was what was in the papers at the time. That it was Lukaku, Inter couldn't let both of them go. That something like Martinez was... They'd agreed a fee, but then Lukaku, Chelsea then came in for Lukaku and all the, I don't know, who knows, but I think they'll address the second striker thing as I wouldn't be surprised if it was priority one this summer.
I mean, hopefully they just need one striker rather than two strikers.
That's true.
We'll see what happens. All right. Vinicius, your favorite terrible Spurs player. Talk me through, Rob, if you will, your match day ritual. So how do you prepare for a game? So say it's a sort of Spurs, I was going to say Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. That's
they don't
not
happen,
ever,
yeah.
ever the thing. When was the last one? About 3.5 years ago or
that's
something?
That's right.
So it's a Sunday at some sort of god-awful 4:30 sort of time slot. Talk me through your prep for a Spurs home game.
Yes, I normally do. Probably around 6 to 8 hours prep for a game. It might involve rewatching the previous game that the opposition have played. So I might have it saved or something like that. And then I'll hammer through the old highlights, watch the press conferences. There's loads of stats knocking around, go through all that, pull my sort of documents together. And then, so that's a fair chunk of work. And then match day will be rock up to the stadium about 3 hours before, pop my head into the Spurs TV gallery, go upstairs, do my sound checks, go back downstairs, get some food from the South Stand normally, and then...
Where'd you go? Where's your preferred South Stand?
The chicken... what's the chicken one called? That's the best one, I think.
The one that's got its own sort of shop.
It's got its own bar, yeah. I mean, I like having a drink down at the Beavertown bit, a post-match, but I think pre-match the chicken, and specifically the chicken burger they do there, is the one. So I'll normally go down there and then I might end up chatting to a couple of fans or a couple of mates who are there. Yeah. And then I'll go into the press lounge because we get the team news a bit before and I'll write down the team and do all that. Run pitch side, that's where I'll see Ben. Mm-hmm. So now we're about an hour before kickoff. Do N17 with Ben and Milesy. That's normally about 25 minutes. And then run up from the ground floor to level 5 where you sit and where I sit and then try and get past everyone boozing and eating, try and get my seat before the teams come out is basically that's the aim of the game by that point.
I was very impressed with your sort of minute by minute reporting on how you get prepped for a game there, Rob. Thanks very much. That was very much the best answer we've had to that.
Oh, that's good mate. I like that.
I imagine it must be quite in terms of prep, it must like post January and sort of going into a new season, getting ready for like new signings and new players and having to sort of, I imagine, dive into the sort of depths of sort of football YouTube videos and weird sort of Eurotrance soundtracks, sort of Bentancur six-minute compilations. Must be a lot of that.
Yeah, I sort of like it, you know, and particularly with Bentancur. I'd seen a lot of Bentancur anyway because of the Champions League, but then it was sometimes they get derided, you know, those things that have like trance underneath them or whatever, but they're actually normally quite good indicators of what a player is. And but I also like, particularly in the Conference League and Europa League, I liked watching like highlights of the opposition and trying to work out exactly what, because I don't watch Mura week in week out or whatever, you know, or even Ren, I don't watch much Liga, so it's really nice when you get a feel for a team and a player and exactly work out what's coming. And then when you sort of sat on N17, for example, and then it is what they do, it feels quite rewarding. Like you've actually given people something mildly useful.
What have you made of the two new boys, by the way?
No, I'm so impressed that two really brilliant signings, I think. I think Bentancur is doing a lot of basic things really well. And you could tell the second he went in the team, that's what Spurs have been missing. Kulusevski, I'll go to Kulusevski. I'm amazed how quickly he's adapted to the Premier League. I can't believe it. I can't believe how at home he looks in the league, his ball retention, his strength, his weight of pass. He does have an eye for a goal. He's really young. He's 21. I thought he'd take a while. I thought that's why it was like 18 month. But, you know, I got the logic of it a little bit. It was like, thought this would be just a bedding in period. No, he's ahead of Lucas now, isn't he, really, on the right wing. And then Bentancur fixes, to a large extent, an issue I've had with the way Spurs play, is that I wonder actually if it manifests from the Mourinho era and the willing to concede possession, but still have control, that, you know, they can have the ball, but we're in control because they can't get through and we'll counterattack and score. That the team actually on the ball now, or not under Conte necessarily, under Nuno certainly, did not look comfortable. And you never felt they were going to dominate a game for 60. It's hard to dominate a game in the Premier League for 90 minutes and have control of the ball and dictate what's happening. But Southampton, for example, came to Spurs the other week and I'd say controlled the ball for 70 minutes of a 90-minute match. I think that is the fundamental issue. It's controlling games, and Bentancur gives Spurs a bit of that, I feel like.
And I think is just that composure to receive the ball anywhere on the pitch. I think Spurs haven't had a figure like that since Dembele.
100%. Yeah.
And, you know, I think we were spoiled for a long time because you could give the ball to Dembele or Wanyama or even Eric Dier during that sort of period, which now feels like about 700 years ago when he was England's kind of premier defensive midfielder. You know, we were really blessed with that sort of security and possession for a long time. And then it kind of all went to sort of glorious shit for a long time.
Yeah, because now
no one could get the ball anywhere without panic sort of breaking out everywhere.
You'd feel it. You could feel the nervous energy of a ball being played to a player with their back to goal. They know someone's tight to them and rush out of play. Or I feel like Bentancur, and I think Skip has this ability as well. We haven't seen much of Skip recently, obviously, because of his injury. Yeah. But I feel like the two of them have got the kind of control that Spurs have been desperately crying out for.
Do you think that could be the combination going forward?
Yeah, I think it could. And even if it ends up being a midfield three, I think Højbjerg's best attribute is win it, give it. Win it, give it. He can play, as we saw for the Leicester goal, that low drilled ball into Kane, you know, from deep and with his back to goal or whatever it might be. Højbjerg can play that pass, but he doesn't run a game. He doesn't run a game, you know, like other midfielders. And I think he's been asked to do the job of like two or three central midfielders, especially when he's playing alongside Tongi, who didn't do as much defensive work as required and wanted to be around the penalty area a bit more and all that. So, you know, either that as a midfield three in some incarnation or the Skip Bentancur. But we haven't seen it yet, so we'll probably get it together in a goal. This doesn't work. It doesn't work at all.
You mentioned one of the great divisive names of Tottenham Hotspur's recent past there, Rob, very briefly. Someone who very much, particularly on the internet, I think splits the fan base almost down the middle, Tongi and Ndombele. Which side of the divide are you, do you reckon?
Didn't you love him? Like
I did, but exactly. I must admit it got a bit wearing, right? I mean, it was hard to defend someone that, and I don't mean to say this because I feel like, I don't mean to say this in a sort of personal way that I'm kind of digging him out, but I just don't think everyone is physically cut out to play in the Premier League. I just don't think I don't believe that he was turning up for training and not doing anything, for example, or he was going home and ordering like 50 quid's worth of McDonald's and that was his afternoon sorted. I just don't know physically, and I'd also say the same for Lo Celso, quite honestly, in a different way, but I just think some players are built for different leagues, and I just don't know that unless you were going to build a team around him, which, you know, Spurs have had a history of doing, I think to someone like Van der Vaart perhaps, where the whole sort of team was set up to ensure that he really didn't have to do that much running. He could just sort of sprinkle his magic across a game, and that was what, you know, we were happy with. And there was a period, right, where Tongi was allowed to just play as the number 10, wasn't asked to do an awful lot of defensive stuff. And it looked like for about, you know, 2 or 3 months that Jose had kind of cracked the Ndombele riddle. But I just, not Conte. I don't think it was ever going to work with him.
No, and I think that the most indicting thing in a sense for Ndombele's Spurs career is that it wasn't just, I mean, Jose was saying this, and we didn't know if it was like tough love, Jose's tough love kind of deal. Ryan Mason didn't give him a kick. as interim manager. Clearly Nuno didn't fancy him because he didn't play in the first three games and we all thought he was going to be one of those out.
And he had the whole summer. It's like he came back early, if I seem to remember. He was like apparently he was fit for the first time in the preseason. Yeah, it was...
No, I think it became apparent then. And then Nuno, things went bad and Nuno started playing him. He scored against Newcastle and you were like, oh, maybe they do need him in the team. And then it just wasn't happening again. And then Conte just came in and went, he's not for me. So I don't know what's going to happen with Tongi. Players have been sent out on loan by Conte before and like Ivan Perisic and come back and been incredibly important. But I'd be, truth be told, I'd be surprised. And it's also sad because it looked like Spurs had got it right. It looked like he was an unbelievably good player, but maybe not a Premier League player. Not everyone is.
Same with Lascelles, I think, quite honestly. I just think some, like I said, some players just physically seem to be built for this league. And I think Kulusevski and Bentancur actually seem to be good examples where they're
absolutely.
Just,
I think this is what Conte's saying, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Conte's been saying this, not necessarily in the most, discretionary code imaginable, but that some of the players that are not Premier League players, he's explicit, And as soon as Kulusevski was here, he was hammering. I love hard work. I love the physicality of the Premier League. He was straight on it.
I think he's going to be. He's going to be a superstar next season.
So do I.
I think he's sort of 15 to 20 goals, like a lot of assists. Yeah, it's going to be.
Do you like his chant, Charlie? You know his. Have you heard his chant? The gimme a ginger from Sweden. As a fellow ginger person, I absolutely love it.
I was hoping. We might have heard it against Everton, but I didn't. I mean, maybe
it's on social media, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you must feel this, Rob. Our sort of chant game is so terribly poor at Spurs that I was thrilled that this was going to perhaps be a new thing. And
well, I love bespoke chants. I love bespoke. Liverpool have got an absolute belter at the moment about Diogo Jota. It's really, really good. And that's why the gimme, I thought, brilliant. Because I think Liverpool are very good at it. Liverpool create quite bespoke. And Man United are. They're both fan bases that are really good at creating both bespoke chants. So I haven't lost hope for that gimme a ginger from Sweden chant. I'm still hoping that the South Stand tears into that. You know, but
maybe...
what was that? Yeah.
Go on.
No, it was nice when Delhi got his farewell that, we've got Ellie, was being belted out. That was lovely, actually, the other night against Everton.
It was nice, yeah. That night was more about Delhi than perhaps rubbing Everton's noses in it that we've got better players. I reckon it will take... Kulusevski needs a home goal. I think if he perhaps scores against West Ham, then
that's a good point. Very good point. I like
he's only scored away from home so far, hasn't he?
That's
so
right,
maybe he just needs that sort of joyous moment in front of the South Stand.
Imagine 62,000 people going, gimme. it'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Right, let's change things up a bit. Give me your all-time favourite Spurs shirt, please, Rob.
I really like the pony one with the... I'm going to use the word lilac. So it's white. Where is it? Let me get this right. Not that one. I want to get the description right here.
Okay.
So it had like a lilac-y kind of collar and the pony emblem down the side. And I like the pony. Do you remember the pony blue one with the cream sleeves and then gold trim? Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I want to say like 97, 98 or something. Mm-hmm. Like I love blue and gold. Is like I love kits that are blue and gold and black and gold and that kind of thing. So I like them. But I think the third one this season is a classic. I think that's
You mean the? Do you mean the purple and green one or the black?
The one that's like a base. The space one. I don't know.
The away one.
Is that that's the away one? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I'm being like needlessly negative about that. It's like
I'm the most pedantic person in the world, so don't worry about that. So the second one from this season, and I really liked actually the one from the Champions League semi-final Ajax. That I think the whole idea of it was that there was like North London, wasn't it? Wasn't it a map of Tottenham in the top of it?
17, yeah, sort of typography thing. Yeah.
Loved it. Loved that kit. So there's loads of classic home ones, but a lot of the away ones actually stick out.
And I guess it's about moments as well, right? I mean, that Ajax sort of, the kind of green kit, I don't think many people were particularly fond of that shirt at all when it first.
Maybe I wasn't either.
Yeah. It was probably your first. I think we wore that in your first game.
Exactly.
Newcastle, if I remember. Yeah.
Great memory. Yeah.
And I remember when that came out, everyone was like, "What the Christ have Nike done now?" But
I liked it, mate. I was into it.
I liked it. I mean, I kind of like wild, crazy shirts, particularly sort of third shirts. I feel like if you're going to go mad, then you do it on the third shirt, right? But do you feel like Nike's sort of output? How do you feel like that's been on the whole?
I mean, I don't think there's a great deal you can do with the home one. I don't think there really. I mean, here's what I'd love Nike to do. I would love a pinstripe. For the home. I would love like a mega light, quite spaced out. I love pinstripe kits. I think pinstripe kits are my peak. So I would love a really subtle, maybe like a gray pinstripe or some kind of like mega light blue. And then really dark sleeve collar. That's what I'd like to see. Because what else can you do, really? You know, blue trim, white shirt. There's not a lot you can do. But I feel like the away shirts have been... I even like the sky blue one, which had Nike written like it is on like Nike Air. You know that?
Yeah, that deserved better, that kit. That was the original sort of Nike. Because, I mean, was like proper sort of posh... Bag end of Poch's era, Jose coming in, all those like miserable Champions League games. I remember, just not a lot of joy.
There probably is a rotten away day somewhere in Europe that actually is associated with that kit in my mind, probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the purple and green one to me this season is just like Moura away, which I think, I was trying to figure out if that's is that the lowest point of this season so far? Should probably add so far because God knows what happened.
Moura away. Yeah, probably.
Because that was last minute, wasn't it? That was like Spurs. All they had to do was draw to basically like, I mean, not that it became moot entirely because Spurs obviously got kicked out of that.
I think that was the lowest. And then I think, I felt like Southampton was the most sort of damaging in terms of, I mean, the Conference League is a funny old thing, isn't it? And that was obviously embarrassing. The Moura defeat was embarrassing, but I felt like Southampton was more damaging. But yeah, the Moura game, it was just like, what has happened now?
I mean, that's the mad thing about this season when you think back to like the peaks and troughs that Spurs have gone through. I mean, obviously the Nuno kind of era, if you can call it an era, and you think back to the sort of highs of that City game opening day, which was, I don't know about you, but that for me was about as unified and just heartwarming a place that I've seen the stadium
the City
since it's opened.
1-0. I remember going into the studio at N17, actually, because that's on the fourth floor, because we were doing it in the studio then, and going into Ben, because I was on with Ben after the game, and I was like, oh my God, that was unreal. Like the stadium, you can feel it. Like it was, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on. There was like the Harry Kane, Harry wasn't involved, obviously. And then to beat City, you know, they had Grealish on the left wing and Tanganga just dominated every play. It was all of it, you know, an academy player stopping £100 million Grealish, £50 million Sterling. There was loads of stuff in there. I think you're probably right in terms of like just pure joy. That was probably the best it's been, actually.
And then, a few weeks later, they're getting thrashed by Arsenal and, Palace.
Maybe Arsenal away that first half. That was pretty low, wasn't it? That was rough. Very rough.
That was maybe the worst I've seen a Spurs team play in about 15 years.
Just in terms
of like how inept they were set up and how devoid of passion the players looked. They just looked like they'd completely given up on it at that point. And he probably should have gone after that, I think.
It was tough because he won his first
Manager of the month.
It was crazy. I'm sure there'll be dissertations about what happened in that 2 or 3 months about trying to work out. You could write like a dossier on Mourinho's era, but there might be someone's got to analyse what happened with Nuno.
Yeah, maybe more of a pamphlet, but someone will do it for sure. Right, sixth question. Your Spurs heaven and your Spurs hell, Rob. So when have you felt like the place has been at its real peak and then when's been the absolute most miserable time to be doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the opening of the stadium felt really, that was a special night. You know, it was a low-key opening ceremony, but I really liked it. I really loved the opening ceremony that Spurs had. And I think it was the same. I think the Haringey Vox Choir who came in for the Ukraine thing on the Everton game. I think there was some of the same I forget.
Yeah, I read that too.
Same choir. But it's tough to beat Ajax away, isn't it, really? I mean, what was the game? Was it Bournemouth at home where Lucas scored three? I want to say maybe it's the first home game after Ajax.
Was it Huddersfield?
Huddersfield. Sorry, mate, Huddersfield. The place was just like... It was a party. And I was down in the... Again, I was down in the South Stand. People down there for ages. They were down there for ages, just still singing about Lucas and Delhi and what had happened and the fact they were in the Champions League final. It was just brilliant. Yeah, so probably around that time.
We've spoken about it on the podcast before and guests have said the same. That month... Because it was a really long time between the end of the Premier League season and the
Champions
final.
Ages,
like a full month. That period. I think we all allowed ourselves at least like 3 weeks just to sort of... And I remember walking home to the Everton. I think we played Everton last game of the season.
That's right, 2-2.
2-2. Yeah. And I remember walking back and going through Bruce Castle Park and you could still hear... I was sort of in the South Stand for ages, but the party was just still going. You could hear the music for sort of miles around. And there was just this... Yeah, it was like we were kind of sending our boys off to, go and sort of win the cup.
And on a good note, because Spurs hadn't actually qualified for the Champions League. I think they only needed Arsenal were at Burnley or something like that. I can't remember. And it had to be Spurs lost or Arsenal won, and there was a crazy goal difference. It was basically on. And then that was all loaded in there. Pipping Arsenal again to fourth and Champions League. It did feel like that, mate. It was like, off you go, boys. We'll see you in a few weeks in Madrid. And that was a special time.
Yeah. And then 12 seconds into the final, that was basically it. Anyway.
It didn't take long for things to unravel.
Your Spurs hell, when's been... And I suppose in your job too, when's it been the toughest to sort of get on the mic and try and... Because, you are there to sort of obviously supply context and be very realistic and pragmatic about what's happening. But you also have to inject that passion, try and be positive about things as well. When's that been toughest?
Well, I think there's obviously been I could talk about obvious embarrassing defeats. So there's been, say, Colchester League Cup, say, Borough.
Oh, God, I forget about that.
Yeah, I know. That's Troy Parrott up front that night. So that was Colchester. There was Mora, Vitesse. All those like horrible. Dinamo Zagreb was really low, wasn't it? Obviously, that I know. I'm sorry to be putting you through.
No.
But there was there's a game that actually that really stands out in my head, which was Chelsea came to the stadium 1-0. Tuchel had been in charge for about 8 days. He'd had two games in charge, and he'd drawn 1-0 where they passed the ball too much against Wolves, I think, and then they won. Then they came to Spurs and were fantastic. They were just, do you remember, they were just doing overload after overload. It was like they had like five wing-backs either side.
And they should have won about 6-0. And yeah, going back to Vinicius, we somehow had that chance to equalise.
Absolutely, yeah. That's right. And I remember going in and we were on N17 and just saying, there's just no... just being sort of in awe of the fact that Chelsea in the space of such a short space, they got unbelievable players. Like, we can't deny it. Loads of money, unbelievable players. But in that short space of time, Tuchel had done that work. And Jose had been in the Spurs job for quite a while at that point, I think about 15 months. And the team just was nowhere near the level of Chelsea. Chelsea didn't look like it wasn't new manager bounce. That was tactical brilliance. And of course, that manifested in a win in the Champions League. I just really remember that game thinking, oh, it's a bit concerning, maybe. This is a bit concerning that Spurs didn't give Chelsea more of a game. And obviously Chelsea ever since really have had like a bit of a hoodoo, haven't they? Even when Chelsea were in bad form this season, they managed to beat Spurs. So that one sticks out probably.
I feel like I've got to ask you as well. These are obviously challenging times for football. You mentioned Chelsea. There's a ton of stuff going on around the world that is impacting our sort of day-to-day as football fans. How do you feel, taking on that broader context when you're talking about football, when you're commentating about football? Does it kind of weigh on you? Do you feel the pressure to acknowledge stuff like that? How do you see the state that football is in even right now?
Do you mean overall, mate? Everything going on? Or do you mean...
I think so, yeah. I mean, Spurs, Spurs are sort of not quite in, for once, not in the eye of this storm, it feels like right now. But yeah, and as a person, who... Is in within things, football.
Yeah, there are things that make football unlikable at times, aren't there? the things that you, and not necessarily the actual mechanics of the game, like the game is the game and it's always brilliant, but the stuff that's around football. I mean, you know, Eddie Howe and his Newcastle press conferences and what's happening at Chelsea.
How do you feel? That's a question I feel like I want to ask you as well. The questions that Howe is facing right now, you've been a football reporter. Would you be asking him those questions? Do you think they're fair?
I'd like to think so. Oh, they're 100%. 100% fair game. Absolutely. Yeah. Eddie took that job and, you know, I'm not enamored with his answer, but he has his tactic. He's compartmentalized it and saying, well, his thing's the same every time. I'm a football manager. I'm here to manage a football team. And that's what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
It actually, I think what's happening now, and look, there's like, I'm not the most politically savvy person in the world, but we know that Russia, Ukraine is a separate issue, but it's highlighting Eddie Howe's issue and the Newcastle United's issue. And I wonder, I mean, I was asking a few ex-pros the other day, even like, do you think this will make players consider a bit who they play for? Even if it means making more money, how many players will look at Newcastle United and say, I could earn another $2 million a year if I go there, but it doesn't sit right? I think that will be interesting. And if players start getting asked, I think that's interesting. I'm not judging any player. I'm not really. I just think that'll be an interesting line to see where this goes, because it does leave you feeling a bit icky, doesn't it? Sometimes, you know, it does.
It's tough, you know, and I think back to even the Super League stuff, you know, and I guess bringing it back to Spurs, and, you know, I felt like Ryan Mason was sort of left to answer. I think that's a very different situation to what Eddie Howe is sort of experiencing right now. But, you know, football managers have to sit there and take it, and they have to answer these questions, and they have to be prepared to sort of understand why people are asking them. And I don't think in this instance with Howe, and I guess Guardiola is probably going to start getting more questions again.
I think that started the other day, in fact. And again, I was surprised by some of his handling of it. I think Thomas Tuchel's been an interesting listen on it, actually. And, you know, even criticising the fans at saying Roman Abramovich's name during the minute of appreciation and reflection, sorry, from people in Ukraine. I think it was good to see him do that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see it, but maybe in a year's time we'll all forget it all. I hope it's an eye-opening moment for football, not just in this country, but European football. I mean, I was even in the car today, Charlie, thinking about PSG and going, what even is this PSG thing? They've ruined the league. That, you know, to an extent, the competition at the very top, I know they didn't win the league last year, but it's distorted the competition, distorted the financial market. Their fans don't even enjoy it. They're booing Messi and Neymar. I don't really know. Going out of the champion, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know what that really is now, that project. But
And it's interesting, because I think the club just assume, oh, if we win the Champions League, it'll be fine. The fans, that's all they want. They just want the Champions League, same as us. And to read the statement that the sort of ultras or whatever the PSG sort of hardcore fans are called, you know, they made no mention of it. That's not the point to them. It's not about, oh, yeah, we'll shut up if we win the Champions League. It's about just feeling that the club isn't a sort of marketing exercise or sports washing, or, you know, they want some sort of, they want to be able to identify with the football club.
Well, you know. Clubs are an extension of yourself. So if your club does something embarrassing that you don't agree with, or if they lose in an embarrassing, that's why defeats are so hurtful. It's because they do feel like an extension of yourself. You want to feel they represent you in the best way, which is why you so often hear fans say, we just want to see the players trying and all this kind of thing. You know? So I think it feels very personal when your club does something that you find egregious or morally disagree with. And let's see. I don't think the PSG owners are going anywhere anytime soon. I'd be very surprised. But it was unbelievably embarrassing defeat the other night. Just unbelievably embarrassing.
Yeah. Right. Let's sort of shivvy along a little bit. Where are you with Spurs right now, Rob? Question 7. What do you reckon? How positive are you? How negative are you?
It depends what games just happened. I think I still, Conte's deal is not long. It's 18 months. And so he's probably got like 15 months of it or whatever it is left. I don't quite know. If he stays for a long time, I am unbelievably positive. because I'm already, even the Man United game, I think, you know, everyone felt deflated by the result, and it was, they're very damaging for the, it might be very damaging for top four, obviously. But there was so much in there that you can see it's happening, that what he wants is happening. And the way they're playing the ball, the way they're scoring goals and creating chances, there are still deficiencies for sure. And I think there's a lot of that feeling that I think the reason fans are so worried about Conte, you know, leaving, or, you know, even be it after 18 months, is that I think fans deep down are seeing it. They're seeing his tactics, is the improvements, what he wants. Sure, Harry Kane saying, you know, we're all behind Antonio Conte, we believe in what he's doing. So at the moment, it really feels like a knife edgy kind of time, doesn't it, really? And it depends on Conte and Kane and getting top four or not getting top four. But overall, I think I'm optimistic. And, you know, I think the club have acknowledged now that change has to be made in terms of the personnel of the squad, regardless of who's the manager. You know, it's been plodding along with a lot of the same players and it just hasn't been working. So I think the summer will be exciting. We'll see some smart changes, I think, in terms of the playing squad. So in general, I'm optimistic.
Yeah, same. I think that, you know, even stripping away the sort of melodrama of, is Conte going to walk? Is Kane going to be there? I think when you watch Tottenham Hotspur play right now, if you stuck, my brother said this to me the other day, if you stuck Inter's foot wingbacks from last season in this Tottenham team right now, if you had Perisic and Hakimi, obviously two outstanding players, but I think even if you had two sort of actual wing-backs that can do what Conte wants to do on a semi-regular basis, I think Spurs would walk top four. I think, you know, they are getting into...
Yeah.
I do, because I just think the ball that they're getting down there are opportunities to score, all, you know, time and time and time again. And I think the sort of system is there. I think the way the play is being built up, particularly with Bentancur now there, I think you're right. You can see with your eyes what is happening. I just don't know that yet the personnel is there to sort of execute the master plan. Hopefully in the summer that happens. But like you say, there's a lot of ifs and buts and maybes. And, you know, of course, with Spurs, there's always the added sort of Arsenal terror. But not only might Spurs slip up, but we'll have to watch Arsenal sort of walk gloriously through the top four gates again. And
absolutely. You know, which could well happen. I mean, they look like...
I mean, odds on now, I'd say, right? I think...
Yeah.
It's a bit of a, it's always the way with Tottenham. Just, you know, our success is usually Arsenal's cost and vice versa. But we shall be positive. he says, rather
for about 5 minutes.
For about 5 minutes. Final question, Rob. Can we get a culture recommendation from you, please? So again, we ask this of everyone. It can be an album, a TV show, a film, a book, an exhibition, somewhere you've eaten, that you've loved, anything at all.
Can I do three quickly?
Of course you can. Of course you can.
First one is the new album from Rex Orange County. So absolutely love Rex Orange County. I think he's an unbelievable talent. He's just got his new album out, Who Cares? And I love everything he does. I've seen him live quite a few times. Real name Alex. I can't remember his surname. But my dog's named Rex because of Rex Orange County. And it's a good name, obviously. Me and my wife walked down to his music on our wedding day out of the church. And
which song?
It was actually his cover of the song from a Toy Story. You Got a Friend in Me, and he actually had recorded that?
Randy Newman.
And he has it. They do it together. So Randy Newman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rex asked him, "Can I cover it?" And then he said, "I want to be on it." So they do it together. So we walked out to church that. So I love him, and I think his new album's, again, it's just really special. It's, I don't know what you call it, bedroom pop or something. I'm not quite sure what category it falls into, but he also uses like unusual chord progressions and like jazzy kind of sounds in the middle of pop songs, and he keeps them interesting for like such a long time. And his best stuff, I always think, when he does something with Tyler, the Creator, the rapper Tyler, the Creator, they've got a song on there together. Again, they always do something together. Open a Window is just like a killer. So that's just out. So that's my music. And then I'll go Twitch, right? On Twitch right now, the Scottish comedian Limmy is doing unbelievable. Do you like Limmy? Do you know Limmy, Charlie? Are you a fan of Limmy?
I do like Limmy. I wouldn't say like I'm a super fan, but I feel like my friends just are constantly, like, WhatsApp groups are usually alive with some sort of Limmy content.
Right now, what he's doing on Twitch is insane. So he has, he's got this, there's this sort of adult version of Minecraft that I'd never heard of before called Rust, where you sort of survive, okay, but you can kill each other. And he's paying for this server, and all these other streams are on the server, but he's the owner of the server. And it is so, and I love everything he does, his books, his, I have seen him live in London, somewhere around Hammersmith, his TV shows, his sketches, everything he does. I think he's unbelievably rude, so funny. And what he's doing right now on Twitch, you know, if I wasn't talking to you, I'd be watching him for definite, because he's on right now, is just so funny and unique and compelling. And there's all these narratives about revenge, because people are genuinely screwing over each other, people in his server, and then they're avenging each other. It's just, I know it's a weird cultural reference, but I don't know if that really works in the, for recommendations, but I think it's just...
No, it does. It
it's
does.
Like compelling sure. viewing at the minute, what they're doing on there. And my final one would be the Kanye documentary on Netflix right now. I've not seen the third one, but I've seen the opening two. And my wife's a documentary maker. She works documentaries. And it's just a really interesting... The way they've done it, the guy's done it. Have you watched it, Charlie? Have you seen
it? Yeah, we finished a couple of days ago, the last one.
Yeah, so I just think what that Cudi's done with it, because I thought... he'd inserted himself in. Originally, I was like, ooh, he's put himself in this a bit too. I was worried it was going to be self-indulgent and trying to like piggyback Kanye as if they did it together and all this stuff. But actually, it's so key to the narrative. I think it's a really interesting piece of documentary making. The footage's unreal, isn't it? Mm. The stuff he's got on tape is crazy. Him rapping around office, you know.
Almost unparalleled in terms of someone that culturally important to get that level of, yeah, insight and just footage, you know, just the raw footage alone of someone that was on the brink of such megastardom. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it.
No, it's crazy. And like genuine, like moments where he's rapping to Jay-Z and it doesn't feel like fake. Jay-Z's just like, I didn't know you could do that. You know, they feel sincere. Those moments with Pharrell and Mos Def and everything, they feel like sincere moments, and you're seeing it happen in real time. And he's very likable. Kanye's arrogant, but very likable in it. Haven't got to episode 3 yet. I think that just came out the other day, didn't it?
Let's have a chat after episode 3, because that takes a lot of digestion. that one
does it really?
Oh no! I mean, just in a sort of, it obviously brings you pretty much up to date and covers.
Very pleasant right now, is he at all? So
I think he's going through an awful lot, and yeah, it's tough to watch. But again, I think, you know, this is someone who is just has been so vital to sort of culture really for such a long time that it's just remarkable to get this kind of insight into such a complicated character. But yeah, let's have a chat after episode 3.
Okay, come up to 505 where I am, and then after home.
You're very brave giving your coordinates away in the stadium, Rob.
Should I not do that? I don't think anyone cares where I am, and there's also like security in the way. But I don't think all right, well, we'll meet up on the fifth floor then somewhere, and then we can digest that third episode.
Absolutely. We'll get a chicken burger downstairs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Perfect. Every time.
Rob, that was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your company and your time. It's been a real privilege chatting to you about Tottenham and everything else. Really loved it.
Loved it, mate. I know I feel like I've taken up your time actually, because I've been rambling on, but it's been really nice. I love talking about Spurs and Rex Orange County, obviously.
Well, this is what we're here for, to indulge all those passions.
This is your unique selling point, isn't it? Your USP.
We try. Well, listen, best of luck for the rest of the season. Let's hope it ends on a nice positive note for everyone. And yeah, we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Charlie.
Not at all. Rob, thank you very much. I've been Charlie. That was Rob Daly. And you've been listening to a very special episode of Hometown Glory. Thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.